One by one, the troopers begin rappelling down lengths of fast wire, vanishing into the jungle canopy. I draw the combat shotgun from the sling on my back and step out of the Valkyrie, falling for a moment before the sea of treetops swallows me. The jungle crowds around me and towers overhead in an undulating green cliffside, the swaying canopy stealing away the sunlight until it darkens almost to twilight. My eyes are grateful for it. I crouch, taking up a handful of the soil and masking my face with it. I allow myself a moment to savor the functions of organs still new enough within me to consider miraculous, parsing through the chemical properties of Aztlan's verdant bounty.
Up, faceless.
The stock of my shotgun crunches against my shoulder as the other scout passes me, joining the squad in panning the trees for threats. After a quick perimeter check, the mortal troops settle into patrol chevrons, and we move.
Faceless, both of you. On point.
Matthias and I jog to the front of the formation, alongside the Pathfinder troopers. We forge a passage, hacking with our blades. The humidity forms a curtain of smog that swirls up knee-high from the jungle floor, reducing the ground to a murky silhouette. We trek with care, maintaining a decent pace through the undergrowth when Matthias freezes.
Hold.
I raise a fist and the patrol halts. I strain my senses, eyes roving, ears parsing through the deluge of stimuli for anything that could be hostile. The muscles in my neck tense around the vox bead taped to my throat. After a few moments, Matthias nods to the Pathfinder. Nothing. This time. The soldier ahead of me waves the patrol forward, a moment before he disappears down into the earth.
Iko!
I crouch over the pit to glance down at the trooper impaled through the legs 2 meters down. The trap is simple, a confusion of crude wooden spikes easily splintered and smeared with filth to hasten infection.
Throw them to her! Help me!
The trooper reaches for me with shaking hands, already pale from blood loss. He has a wild, fever-sick kind of desperation in his eyes, like I am going to be the one to save him from all of this. I am not. I consider reaching for him, or putting a round through his head, when I feel Baldessar's gauntlet on my shoulder.
Him. The mortals insisted on coming along, but the sooner they are gone, the faster we will be able to move. Until then, each of them is a resource to be expended, and not every bolt shell strikes the target.
Wait! We have to hold here. Give time for a medicate to stabilize him until we can vox for a bird to pull him out.
Traps like this are designed to fix us in place for an ambush. We keep moving.
We cannot just
be silent. Or I will make you silent.
The sergeant suddenly sees his reflection in the edge of Matthias's flensing knife. The soldier's face tightens, but he yields with a hollow nod of his head. Baldessar gives the signal, and we continue forward.
Easy now, Iko. I've got you.
Hours stretch behind us with no contact with the enemy. All I see of the Tau is the traps it has woven through the jungle. Each snare and deception is more cunning than the last, but after the first of them, our guard is high and we are able to bypass or disable whatever we come across.
Why do they not come and fight us?
I can sense the building frustration in my brother's soul, because it mirrors my own.
We are fighting, brother, here and now, to determine who is hunter and who is prey.
It is as we press deeper that I hear it. An almost imperceptible hum. Not one heard so much as felt, as a subtle vibration within my inner ear. It is not a natural tone, but a mechanical one. The Promethium-fueled rumble of Imperial technology is absent from it, and in its place is something sterile and slick that sets my teeth on edge. I glimpse the fronds of a broadleaf shimmer and flex, like water is pouring down it. But there is no water. I see the vaguest blink of a red circle, a second too late. Matthias's head is gone, his heart's beating blood in a steaming froth from the burning stump of his neck. He collapses at my feet, limbs twitching as his nerves fire without purpose.
Contact! Fire! Fire!
The mortals fire back without a target. Any sign of former discipline cast aside as they shoot in all directions. They have accepted the role of prey. Blue-tinged thunderclaps burst the trees around us, sending the massive trunks crashing down to crush and separate us. The foe seeks to disorient, to sow confusion and bedlam. They are succeeding. The first clear sight of the enemy comes, a shoal of pale gray saucers flitting through the trees. Plasma fire pours from the weapons mounted to them, stitching across the patrol. Soldiers scream as they are riddled with energy bolts that char their flesh and set them on fire. I strike one of the drones with my shotgun, sending it pinwheeling into the trunk of a rotting tree, where it explodes in a spectral blue fireball. I roll as two more inundate my position with plasma. Baldassar and Zolt lend their bolters to the firefight, blowing them apart.
In the trees!
More aliens materialize. Yet these are not the Tau either. The Xenos are one of the Tau's subservient races, an abhorrent breed of avian biped with mottled greenish-brown flesh and distended jaws. Slender and dressed only in bits of leather and bone fetishes, they leap from the treetops, brandishing bladed clubs and crude rifles that spew great bursts of black smoke. More of the wild aliens rear up from out of the fog within arm's reach of the patrol. All semblance of order disintegrates as each man is forced to fight for his individual survival. One of the Kroot appears before me. My blade punches through its temple. A kick to the ribcage flings it back as my shotgun kills a second. Even as we crash against them in melee, I know the Kroot are not the real threat. They and the drones, their attack is a ruse, the hounds sent in to disrupt and flush out the quarry, to grant targets to the true hunters lurking in the distance. A shot punches a wailing Xenos out of the air, sending it crashing down in a tangle of limbs. I ensure that the Kroot is dead before sprinting towards the sound of gunfire. Tracer rounds slice between the trees, flecks of steaming starlight in the tropical murk. More of the Xenos machines emerge, loosing salvos of stark blue plasma before shimmering back into the trees. Again, I witness the red circle blinking in the distance over Sergeant Baldassar.
Faceless, move to the flank!
My sergeant staggers as a pulse round strikes him in the chest. It has cored him through the torso, but still he kills two more Kroot in a rage before a drone crashes into him and takes him from his feet. The Xenos machine hugs his chest for a moment before the energy source powering it overloads. I turn as bits of my sergeant pepper my back. And then, as quickly as the ambush began, they are gone, vanished back into the vegetation.
Brothers, anyone, where are you?
I find Cornell crouched among a heap of dead Kroot, sifting through their accoutrement with the tip of his knife. The blade lifts a set of Imperial identification tags bound to one of the creature's war clubs.
Bastard Xenos.
He acknowledges me standing there, looking up with the dead pirate's face.
The sergeant? He is gone?
Aye. Where is Zolt?
Dead. Crushed by a tree fall. I like to believe that he died without knowing what had felled him. I cannot imagine he would have found it a satisfying end.
Only a handful of the mortal soldiers remain alive. They twitch at every sound, eyes bulging from pale faces drenched in sweat. Cornell nudges the corpse of a Kroot warrior with his boot.
They knew we were coming.
They laid a good ambush. We claimed a fair number of them here, but no Tau.
The scales are not balanced then, not for who we lost. The Tau sniper who led this attack yet lives, where Matthias and the sergeant lie here dead.
Cornell tilts his head, unfamiliar with my brother's name, but understanding reaches him quickly.
Agreed, Faceless. Our kin cry out for a greater vengeance, and you and I will claim it for them.
Form up! Noise and light discipline! Discard anything that will slow you down! From here on, we are moving fast and light!
The troopers look to one another, sweat caking the blood and dirt to their faces. One at least has the courage to give voice to what his comrades are all thinking.
Lords, please, we can turn back, regroup, get on the Vox and have the air power burn this whole jungle black to get these Xenos.
No, that will not be necessary.
He looks to me then, for the first time, as something approaching an equal, a brother.
Because we are the fire.
We set out again, following the trail left by the Kroot. Their hideous musk clings to the jungle, anchored by the steam and moisture, guiding us along the path they had taken, out towards where they had ambushed us. Cornell moves with an unnerving silence ahead of me, his path always shifting, his eyes poring over every treetop and every shadow.
Brother, how do we...
The older scout seizes me by the arm, flinging me down into a ditch and then stealing down beside me. The mortals scatter, hurrying to cover wherever they can find it. I make to question Cornell, but he looks to me with a hunter's shine to his eyes and a finger pressed to his lips. He nods towards the high tree 60 meters ahead of us.
Do you see it?
I follow Cornell's line of sight, combining the surrounding walls of undulating green until... The camouflage is near perfect, bending the light around a... something perched in the high branches of a broad tree consumed by vines. But I glimpse it again, a smear of awkward space that remains still while the branches around it sway and flex in the jungle's primordial rhythm. For a moment, the stealth system diminishes, revealing a small gray figure holding a long-barreled rifle, its back-swept helm bisected by a single stripe of red.
Brother, do you see it?
Yes.
Good. Their tactics may be sound, but not when used twice. The Xenos thinks to spring another trap and catch us unaware, but this time, we are ready for it.
He chambers around into his stalker pattern bolter.
We will press up, and while we do, I want you to swing around nice and quiet, get behind it, and push it right to us.
Would they use the same tactic again? If so, there will be others in concealment. They will move to hound us into its crosshairs.
I need you to focus now, Faceless. Move along the flank, fast and quiet, and force the Xenos to me. Clear?
Done.
We take it together, and this skull is yours. Now go.
I slip out of the ditch, circling to the right and moving quickly from the shadows of tree after tree. I stalk silently, my eyes locked to the cyclopean hardwood where the smear lurks in its perch. Unease curls my guts as I approach it. Was Cornell right? If the Tau intends to repeat its plan, there will be other elements at play. More of its foul kind sent to dislodge us from cover and spoil the sharpshooter with a wealth of targets. If that is true, then where are they? The question ticks into my mind at the same time as ice wraps my spine and instinct throws me flat. A flurry of energy bolts slashes over my head, close enough to blister the flesh of my scalp and blast the tree behind me to pulp. With the groan of a wounded beast, the bifurcated trunk swings down towards me like a clubbing fist. I roll out from its darkening shadow as it strikes the earth, spraying leaves and tangles of snarled vines. A smudge with a hunched, vaguely humanoid silhouette lands atop the fallen tree. Another appears to my right, but far enough from me that it has yet to bring its weapon to bear. The Tau above me has no such issue. I throw myself to one side, dodging the fusillade of energy bolts that blaze like a swarm of blue firebugs. A shell forces the Tau back, giving me time to close the distance. Tackling the infiltrator is like trying to catch the fog from the jungle floor. The Xenos' armor is all slick surfaces, with nowhere to secure a hold for leverage. I strike the ground, and I hear the air driven from the Tau's lungs. Its stealth field overloads, exposing the dirty gray armor beneath. Momentum carries me over the alien, but I reach out at it and arrest my fall. I seize hold of its chest and roll, coming atop the Tau and ramming my shotgun beneath its jaw in a single motion. The jungle floor glistens with a coating of the Xenos' blood and brain matter. I rise from the shivering corpse, drawing a line of sight on where the other infiltrator is hurrying to put space between us. With the enemy's cloak engaged, I fire where the hum is, shredding the branches and vines around it. As my vision sharpens, I glimpse the Tau blur between the trees. I fire again, and sparks fountain from it, revealing the Xenos as he staggers from a glancing hit. I listen to the Tau's armor grinding and catching. Poised to pursue the alien, I stop, focusing not on what I hear, but what I do not. Cornell's bolter. I sprint back to his position.
Cornell! Brother!
I step, and my boot crunches against something. I look down. It is human bone, the fragments of a skull. Some of it is old, and some of it is not. Cornell is slumped within the underbrush. I can see the jungle floor through the neat hole in the side of his head. Surrounding him are the last dregs of the mortal troopers, blasted into heaps of charred limbs, the telltale work of the Tau's long rifle. A twinge of my past surfaces, the urge to stop for a moment, to devour on some of the roasted meat, to gird my strength, but I ignore it. A greater, more righteous prize beckons. The daylight begins to drain, slithering back from the canopy. The shadows lengthen, blooming to consume all as darkness descends. I check the ammunition of my shotgun, and finding it empty, I drop it. I shed the tools of my chapter, the webbing and technology they had bestowed upon me. I tear the vox bead from my neck. I discard all, save for a rough iron cylinder I store at the small of my back, and my flensing knife.
I will finish this hunt the way I know, the way of Pozul.
My brother had been right about one thing. The Tau skull would be mine. I catch up to the wounded Tau infiltrator moving along a riverbank as the last daylight fades. The Tau's damaged stealth systems flicker as they struggle to function, bathing portions of its body in short washes of invisibility. With its back towards the water, it comes to a halt behind a fallen tree, cursing as it presses a four-fingered hand against the damage my shotgun blast had made of its left shoulder. The Xenos' sleek helmet is hooked to its belt, with no red stripe upon it. I study the visage protruding from its rubberized collar armor. Its face is flat and broad, noseless and covered in oily blue-gray flesh. Lusterless, claret-black eyes dart back and forth as it fumbles for what appears to be a field dressing applied by some hideous, jellied spray. Reaching down, the Tau pries a parasite loose from where it has attached itself to its hoof, flinging it into the river and scratching at the bite. I watch the alien from beneath the water. It is not the alien that took the lives of my kin, yet it will die all the same. I come up without a sound behind it. The Tau has no time to react before it is falling, slipping silently down into the river with me. I embrace the alien from behind, keeping it from thrashing free, legs lacing about its waist, letting our combined weight drag us down. I keep its grasping hands away from its helmet and the life support systems it holds. It needs to breathe. I do not. I do not have to drown it. I can open its throat with my knife, or use it to stab its internal organs into ruin. I can break its neck. But then I see my sergeant, my other slain kindred, lying upon the ground, feeding it with their blood, and indulge the seconds it will take for the water to kill it. Fatigue calms the Xenos for a moment, its chest heaving as it tries to swallow air that is not there. It doesn't last. The Tau knows it is dying, and that starts it thrashing again. The creature's last fight before it drowns. I cradle the dead alien until the last nervous spasms run their course, until I know it is gone. Then I let go, and it slides off my chest to rest against the riverbed. The thought occurs to me then that I could take that Tau skull as my trophy, the offering needed to return and declare myself blooded and a named member of the chapter. Yet I cannot. A strange sense I do not fully grasp compels me to stay. Is it honor? Vengeance? I do not know. But whatever it is, I know in my bones that it is right. I cannot leave with the skull now soaking in the river. That is not the head I am destined to claim as my face in the wars to come. I watch the current drag the body away, and the conviction forms in me. It has been there all along, since the moment Matthias fell, now crystallized into finality. I know what I must do. The soft sound of the alien's drone finds my ears. I sight the disc, struggling along on a damaged drive as it flits through the vegetation and start after it. The hunter is out there, and I shall use its own hound to find it. Stalking the Tau drone carries me high above the jungle floor, spanning a tract of near impassable terrain, before surging upward to the crest of a green wreathed mountain. A second drone hovers about the Tau, though this one is festooned with antennae and protruding sensor clusters, rather than the plasma carbines of the Xenos' hound machines. I hear the vile tongue of the Tau scratch and blubber from its casing as the sniper communes with its hideous ilk. From just a handful of paces distant, I watch it, attending to its machines, guard low and arrogant, believing itself to be safe. The Tau turns to regard the battle drone as the machine sputters towards it, and that is when I begin. The combat drone falls as my thrown knife punches through its armored casing, giving out a squawking wail that is sickeningly close to organic as it carves a small furrow into the dirt. The Tau swings the long barrel of its rifle around, the dull red light of its crosshairs winking insistently in the gloom. The technology of the Tau allows it to track by body heat, by the signature of latent power armor and electrical equipment. Between my abandonment of my gear and the cool mud of the riverbank, I deny my foe all but the barest trace of myself. I reach into a pouch on my belt, taking a simple weapon that I'd made on my path up the mountain. I grip a flat disc of stone in my hand, its edges napped into a crude but effective blade. The Tau turns towards a noise from the jungle, showing me its back. I see the silhouette of a woman's face in my mind's eye, her features lost in the shadow of a forgotten life. I aim for the join between skull and spine, guided by something greater than instinct. I throw, and I strike true. The Tau recoils as the power feed of its armor is cut, depriving it of the ability to see night as day as it tears the helmet free.
Now, Xenos, you must use what nature has given you.
I have not stopped to admire the hunt turning to my favor. I stalk around the Tau, drawing the hounding spiral tighter and tighter around my prey. It is firing wild now. Without its precious helmet to light the darkness, it cannot see me. The Tau is just like any other fearful creature, jumping at the shadows. I reach down, pulling my knife free from the disabled drone as I run. The pendulum finally shifts. Prey becomes hunter, and hunter becomes prey. I am in the air, knife ready as I pounce. A shot screams past my face, illuminating me in stark blue for an instant. It does not blind me, because my eyes are closed. A clubbing strike flings the rifle from the alien's hands. A second takes it from its cloven feet. The Tau reaches for a long knife on its belt, but I am faster. The sweep of my blade takes the grasping hand off at the wrist. I throw a kick to its chest, hard enough to splinter the rounded armor of its breastplate. The Xenos collapses and goes still. My knife brings a swift end to the sensor drone's prattling. At last, I stand over my quarry, the killer of my brothers, in triumph. Does it have a name? Does it matter? Ascension was my mission here, but now it is vengeance. This creature is the answer to both, the debt of honor and the head to be taken.
This day, you have earned my knife, and this night, you shall become the work of my hands. Are you still alive? Of course you are. I can hear you breathing. That is good. The Tau's helmet is slick in my hands, its curved faceplate blank, but for the cluster of darkened sensor lenses protruding from it. I drum a finger against it, tracing along the red stripe bisecting the helm. I assume it is the mark of a veteran, one that designates the alien's seniority. The cunning that this creature has shown would justify that. I cast the helmet aside as I look down upon the creature that wore it. You were too reliant on your technology. I beat you with only a knife and my eyes. A hunter's tools are a boon, but if you cannot claim the prey without them, then you are no hunter. You would never have survived on Pozul.
Garv.
I crouch before the creature, shaking my head slowly. I don't need you to speak. The moment has come, crystallized in time like amber. The moment when I cease to be faceless and claim what is mine by the ancient law of the hunt. I only need you to witness this. Ah! The skull is more delicate than a human's, but was little different to Flem's. My adversary had managed to remain alive for longer than I had anticipated it would, leering its agonized curses up at me as I worked, before finally succumbing. I hate you, as I hate all who stand against the Chapter and Imperium. But here, on this night at least, you have earned my respect. As I weigh the trophy in my hands, I feel none of the former doubt, but instead, satisfaction. I have won my passage into the Chapter, no longer faceless, but named and blooded. You, the prey that thought itself the hunter, are dead. By my hand. The spirits of my brothers can go to their fate in peace. A bladed ferocity flows through my veins. The sheer elation of a foe brought to oblivion in the hunt. Honor given to the mortifactors. I draw the iron cylinder I carry, depressing a rune that rouses its dormant spirit to wakefulness. The beacon strobes crimson in my fist, making the blood on my face as black as the night sky overhead. The Chapter is listening for its call, and soon will come for me. I stand exactly where I was before, when the endless night had first breached the Sea of Souls and settled into high orbit over Aztlan. There is a faded quality to the jungle sphere now, as though the act of spilling blood there had lifted its mysteries from it. Like a jewel that has lost its luster, Aztlan fails to elicit the same wonder it had first roused within me. The planet seems different, yet I understand that it is rather I who has changed, the lens through which it is beheld.
Just as I cease to see the world as a feral child taken from benighted Pozol, my perspective evolves further, irrevocably, now that I am blooded.
And so, we are faceless no longer.
I turn to regard the chaplain as he comes to stand beside me. I hold out the death mask crafted from the Tau skull for him to inspect. He takes it, gauntleted fingertips running along the ridges of its empty eye sockets.
This shall be your visage in war. The last sight your prey shall see until you either fall or ascend to the battle companies. A worthy trophy won, Adoni.
Were it not won at such a cost?
Do not grieve for them, brother. It is our destiny to die in battle. Their bones shall be anointed and enshrined with honor within the Basilica Mortis. Each of your brothers now bathes in the light of the Emperor, and they dwell for eternity with him in the Hall of Victors, just as your vision showed you.
My vision? You knew what it meant?
I understood the possibilities, the potential. What is witnessed in a vision is a reflection of the soul, and each is different in what they see. Blackness does not always mean only one thing. Sometimes it means that your fate is not yet written.
I turn to look back down at Aztlan, my fingers curling into fists at the thought of the Tau still infesting its jungles. At the just retribution I owe, to be paid for by their extermination. When do we get to go back in?
We don't. Not here.
Then where?
I am already feeling softer, my edge blunting with every blink of my eyes. When?
Soon. There will always be another war waiting, Adoni. You will learn that now that you are a taker of heads.
Taker of Heads by Ian St. Martin. Performed by John Banks, Steve Conlin, Andrew Fetz, Emma Gregory, Matthew Hunt, Philip Nightingale, and David Seddon.
The Calculus of Battle by David Geimer. Performed by John Banks, Cliff Chapman, Steve Conlin, Toby Longworth, and Luis Soto. The planetary body on the other side of the fizzing coherence field was little more than a shadow to him. Two-dimensional, the albedo of orbiting warships conveying a glitter pattern of coded data. It was the numbers that transformed a planet into a world. Varicene, Garrison World, population 7.45 billion. The data was inloaded to Cardan Stronos' display as fast as he could read it, golden text strolling across the inner curve of his visor. A jet of frigid vapor blasted over him as he marched under the turbofans of a Thunderhawk gunship in preflight, and onto the embarkation deck, his honor guard close behind.
The planet is 73% overrun.
The voice of the Magos Calculi scratched at Stronos' speech centers where the flesh interfaced with the data tether.
The Navy has the alien abhorrence fleet contained for the short to medium term, but ground forces continue to spread at an exponential rate. Exloading graphics now.
The parabola splayed across Stronos' display, temporarily displacing the relentless inload of screed to the periphery.
Armed resistance at 0.9%, roughly. The calculus prognoses certain and imminent annihilation of all Imperial presence.
I don't disagree, Magos.
Stronus's own voice, deepened and deadened by the immobility of a metallic throat and mouth, legacy of an old wound, was at least recognizable as something that once was, and still aspired to be, human.
Withdrawal is indicated. The Leviathan threatens many worlds, 18 in this subsector alone.
It is them that I am thinking of. 0.9% of 2 billion fighting men would make a material contribution to any war zone.
Questionable. You overlook your own losses, expenditure of materiel to refuel, rearm, and repair.
And how many men is one Space Marine worth in this war?
Do you wish for an answer, War Leader? I have one.
Stiff-muscled, particularly around the mouth, Stronos frowned behind his visor. On derricks and hanging pallets all over the flight deck, dozens of blank-faced servitors tested every bolt and rivet of every black and silver gunship for signs of stress or damage. The uniformed ratings necessary to supervise their labors saluted as Stronos and his retinue marched by the hallowed machines.
The battle calculus can be flexible.
1 plus 1 always equals 2.
And if we add one again? You talk of a closed system, Magos, but I fully intend to open it up.
There was a moment's inactivity from the data tether.
Your armor's spirit informs me that you are on the embarkation deck. I take it your mind is set.
Take it as you see it, my friend.
The code presence in his organic cortex sighed.
Cost increases in line with potential gains. The ratio remains marginal.
I will work that margin.
Dispensing with any superfluous sign-off, the Magos calculi disconnected.
What is the prognosis?
Though he was half a stride behind, Sergeant Jalanghal clearly knew who he had been communing with. They were Iron Hands. Their bond of brotherhood went deeper than mere blood and flesh. Their battle plate and bionics linked by a stream of inload-exload, unbroken in almost 600 years.
Immediate insertion. We will reinforce the cordon around the Varsis Citadel and buy time for the evacuation.
This world has proven its weakness. It is a blight that should be excised.
So it was. Even brothers did not always see eye to eye.
Dead men do not learn from their errors, Sergeant.
A canker that is burned from the body will not metastasize, spreading fear and weakness to distant worlds. And for what? A few million men? Do you know how many billions are deployed to this sector alone?
Stronos looked to their Thunderhawk, bearing the silvered heraldry of the Iron Council. Deck servitors, their hands welded to massive winch handles, operated the turntable that slowly cranked the gunship's armored nose around to face the intemperate blue glare of the coherence field. Its powering turbofans filled Stronos's body with the visceral, full-body thunder of raw machine aggression. The energy field spasmed under the inky caress of the Thunderhawk's exhaust fumes. He strode towards the open assault ramp.
There are 18 million men down there, brother. A drop in the ocean, maybe. But it is my drop. My ocean.
Jalanghal dipped his cable-snarled helm in acquiescence and followed Stronos wordlessly into the gunship. The veteran Iron Hands of his honor guard began to lock themselves into position for launch, but Stronos stopped them.
No. No restraints, brothers.
It is protocol.
We fight not only the alien, but our own calculus. The cost of every second is measured in lives.
Stronos switched his vox frequency to interface with the servitor pilot in the cockpit.
Ready for launch!
Jalanghal and his clave readied their weapons as the assault ramp closed on its hydraulics, and the turbofans built towards liftoff. The descent from high polar geostationary orbit to the combat zone was rapid. The Clave had their weapons loaded, blessed, and triply checked. Stronos's Stormbolter communicated with his armor's core intelligence in a series of clicks and pings as it ran self-diagnostics. His relic weapon, the ancient Axe of Medusa, chattered nonsense to itself as it stole tactical inloads from Stronos's armor. The servo skull wired between its cock-toothed axe blades, always hungry for raw data. The migrainous pinch of the Magos calculi interrupted his thoughts.
A 10%.
Even Stronos' advanced war gear was struggling to punch a Vox signal through the psychoelectric field distortions of the hive mind. But the words from the neural tether were clear.
That is the potential benefit-to-loss ratio of your current action. 8%.
Stronos ignored him. His attention was split between the tactical charts in his visor display and its accompanying screen.
Bring us down, grid Zeta 3. It is easy terrain, and the line there is crumbling. If it falls, the Tyranids will be on the walls in minutes. Order all inbound Thunderhawks to deploy to adjacent grids, a half ring from Epsilon 18 to the range of hills encroaching from Zeta 1, then to provide additional air cover to the evacuation craft.
Jalankal nodded in approval.
A wall of iron, but it will not endure indefinitely against such numbers.
The flesh is weak, brother.
Some weaker than others.
Stronos clasped his brother's pauldron, a pre-battle ritual that Jalankal had never yet decided to acknowledge. No one walked into punishment like an iron hand. The assault ramp lowered, even as the Thunderhawk leveled out, the ramp wobbling in a ferocious wind. It was a dry world. The briefing inloads had told him that, but seeing it for himself was different. It was windswept, coppery and dark. The tactical charts that flickered across his display to keep pace with the gunship described a prehistoric ocean basin. The gross contours Stronos could still see, but everything less had been flooded beneath a seething tide of alien filth. Chitinous bodies rushed like seawater over rocks, and even over the engine thunder of the gunship's fans, Stronos could hear the clacking of segmented legs and hideously irrational body plans. The great devourer swept beneath him towards the static guns of the Imperial Guard. Stronos had no stomach, but he still felt sickened by it. Jalankal raised a fist.
Praise the Omnisire for the Leviathan! We demonstrate the weakness of flesh today.
Stronos nodded.
Let us unbalance the calculus.
Then he stepped off the ramp. He smashed into the tide like a colossal bomb, dropped by an overflying marauder. Bone shards and alien blood spraying high into the air. The tremendous mass of his augmented Terminator plate and servo harness drove him into the ground, when a lesser body would have been bowled through the swarm after the gunship. He rose from his knees with a cry of actuators, Tyranid warrior forms by the thousand already thundering towards him with a single, irresistible will. His storm bolter gave a blur as it ranked targets from 1 all the way to 999 and established a fire pattern. He fired. Alien bodies burst as he sprayed the scrabbling beast with bolter shells. A termagant with two thick rows of spines running along its back managed to scramble between exploding bodies and pounce. Stronos beheaded it with a single swipe of his axe. The weapon's servo mind muttered as it consumed the feast of kill data, reluctantly passing scraps to Stronos' display. The screen had not paused for a moment, but had been shunted to the side again to allow his tactically augmented reality to become the main focus. Brightly defined blocks scrolled down the edges of his display, appraising him of the Xenos creature's bone density, muscle distribution, death reflexes, and the exact amount of force necessary to kill it. That amount of force was exactly what Stronos hammered into the neck of the next beast that tried to gallop past him. Another scrabbled in behind, bounded onto the first alien's corpse, then sprung off just as Stronos swung for it. The quick shift in direction fooled his combat algorithms and spared its neck at the expense of its groin. It appeared to feel no pain as the axe of Medusa hacked it open, but slithered to the ground in a welter of gore, its legs suddenly unable to bear its weight. Stronos stamped on it, the force of his heavily reinforced armor driven down through his heel.
4%.
The Magos calculi's reasoned modulation amidst the alien stampede was jarring.
It drops so quickly.
You have unbalanced the equation, as I believe was your intention. Every second removes more Imperial resource from the world. By your actions, and the actions of your gunship pilots, are the benefits of such action diminished.
The hiss click of his storm bolter's autoloaders seamlessly interjected into the hard roar of gunfire. He shattered the skull of a Hormagaunt, refusing to retreat a single stride, and then drew a tasteless breath of his armor's purified air. It was the first he had needed since embarkation. His machine lungs were commendably efficient.
But I do miss the taste of alien blood on my lips.
He was tracking the active runes of his clave with his organic eye. Clad in power armor, their lesser mass had necessitated a more conventional deployment. But the clave advanced now. War machines in approximated human form, stark and black, gunmetal grills and gorget bundles underlit by the blaze of semi-automatic fire. Automatic status updates blinked between their armor systems and their war leaders as they drew close. But not a word was wasted in greeting. Stronos expected none. He looked back, his first real-world glimpse of the beleaguered Varsis Citadel. He grunted hollowly. It had seemed more formidable in schematic. A ragged cheer rang out as an armored fist squadron, four beat-up Chimeras, escorted by a Leman Russ, with guardsmen clinging to cargo netting on the vehicle's hulls, trundled towards the Iron Hands. The escorting battle tank clattered on one creaking track, dropping slowly off the pace, belching off black smoke each time its frustrated driver tried to up gear and make up the distance on the transports. Jellinghal shredded a pair of Tyranid warrior forms with bursts of bolter fire.
Unexpected reinforcements!
For the second time in one day, Stronos' facial muscles tried to force an expression where there could be none. Centuries he had lived as one of the Iron Hands, and still, mortals could surprise him.
They come to our aid. What manner of angels do they choose to see in us, I wonder?
Ratio now at 2% within the margin of error.
We are the sources of that error, Magos. I will make the margin what I wish it to be.
Stronos disconnected from the link, then issued his armor a mental command to isolate the platoon commander's frequency and open a channel.
Return to the inner defensive line. We cannot hold them here. Turn back!
The response was a hash of static. The platoon's systems lacked the power of a standard Adeptus Astartes squad's war gear, much less that of an Iron Hands command clave. Stronos modulated his own signal power to compensate. Stronos held the signal power there.
Reverse, Lieutenant. Your priority is the evacuation. Turn back now.
Panicked noises punctuated the static. Stronos saw the Leman Russ's long turret cannon begin to traverse. Levitating above the smaller bioforms, like a fetal deformity displayed on an invisible cushion, was an atrophied creature with a cranium so vast that it appeared to have withered its own limbs in order to feed its growth. Its eyes began to glow until torrid incandescence seeped through the gaps in its exoskeleton. There was a pulse, just as Stronos's optics began to burr in protest of the witchlight, and a bolt of energy jabbed from the alien's cranial ridge towards the row of vehicles. A synapse blinked later, and an implosive crack peeled out from one of the Chimeras. The tank managed to rumble a few meters on, then flipped into the air with a bubble of green-veined lightning, opening its hull from the inside, shedding screaming guardsmen as it somersaulted once and crashed to the ground on its roof. Then the tank's battle cannon fired. The Leman Russ rocked back and the creature vanished in a maelstrom of vindictive counter-annihilation worthy of an ally of the Iron Hands. Smoke rose from the tank's motive units. The big gun's recoil had finally done for the damaged track, and the Leman Russ ground to a terminal halt. A swarm of smaller Tyranids scuttled in through the wreckage, smoke and debris. Multi-lasers and sponson-mounted heavy bolters mowed down their numbers, but they were too many and too fast. Stronos bellowed at the swarmed tanks.
Reverse!
Stronos steeled himself as lasfire stitched out from the vehicles. Numbered brackets enclosed targets of choice. The Axe of Medusa excitedly shunted reserve power to its blades.
Clave Stronos, new objective, exterminate.
Jellinghal swung his bolter from the main swell of the tide.
Confirmed! Exterminate!
His words were cut short by a Tyranid blade lift. The gigantic warrior form was twice the height of a space marine, upright, encased in thick bone armor that soaked up the clave's snapshot fire as it hacked through ceramite and iron to cleave off Jalinghal's arm at the elbow. the second of four switching blades reversed back, then rammed up to skewer the veteran Iron Hand through the belly, serrated bone erupting between his shoulders in a welter of sparks. Damage signifiers turned a portion of Stronos' visor display red.
Brother!
Calmly, Jallinghal lifted his bolter one-handed and blasted the monster's face apart. Only once he was mathematically convinced of its death did he then shoot through the arm attached to the impaling blade and drop, the bone sword still embedded in him.
Brother, are you combat effective?
The sergeant responded with a hail of fire into the swarm.
A flesh wound. If a Tyranid intends to fell an Iron Hand of my age, then it will need to be more thorough.
Stronos turned his fire on the warrior forms assailing his brothers. The guardsmen were on their own. He felt the shockwave as the Lehman Russ's shell store detonated, blowing off the tank's turret. The remaining Chimeras belatedly backed up, slowly, finding it tough going through the swarm of Gaunts that had already got between them and the defense lines. Stronos moved ponderously through the melee of hammering bolters and hissing claws. A large Tyranid warrior struggling in the grip of his servo arm. Bio-acid and bone missiles scratched the gilt from his armor. But he knew, as Jallinghal had known, that he could take the punishment. Therein lay the true power of the calculus. To ensure that victory was certain before ever setting foot on a world. Hearing the scream of descending turbofans, he looked up into the white glare of spotlights and a brutal downwash that tossed dust across his faceplate. The gunship came down, pre-emptying the data mission that he had known was coming.
Ratio at zero, War Leader. There is nothing further to be gained.
I know.
The gunship's underwing heavy bolters murdered the ground beneath it, enough to lower its ramp. Jallinghal and the Enclave stomped towards it, their own bolters overlapping meticulously to keep the swarm from the aircraft. Last to go, Stronos turned to watch as a pack of Formagons leapt into the back of one of the Chimeras. Screams tore across the box, one longer and more immediate in its agony than the others. The tank had evidently been Jaro's. The last spits of lasfire sputtered out, heavier bioforms with massive rending tusks chewing through the stranded vehicles. Stronos kept his compassion for humanity alive by keeping it cold, locked forever in iron like an undying corpse in the body of a dreadnought. And he turned his gaze to the ocean of purple and white carapace that seethed towards the faltering siege guns of the Citadel. It had been a long time since Cardan Stronos had been truly afraid, but he thought he could imagine the terror that would soon grip the people of Varsis. His helm pictures recorded the scene. It would almost certainly be useful data to somebody, one day.
Terminate the evacuation. Recall all chapter vessels.
He could hear the desperate pleas of the tank crew, through the metal of the last Chimera's armor, and through the vox speed of Lieutenant Jaro, whose lifeless ear must have been pressed against it. He ignored them. Ultimately, they were all merely numbers in an equation.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.